Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
Oh, man. You know, every week we're trying to do this thing because the folks who are handling the 200th anniversary of Escambia County coming up this summer are writing an article a week in the PNJ. And every Wednesday we try to communicate with or connect with one of the authors to talk about the thing that they wrote about in the paper. It's really fun stuff. Today we got Margot Stringfield on the line. She is an archaeologist at the UWF Archaeology Institute. Margot, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So I'm kind of giving you double duty today because there have been two articles because I was on vacation, but I know you can talk about the both of them. The first article was all about firsts in Pensacola, and some of these are so fascinating. Can you talk a little bit about the first newspaper and how that worked?
Oh, I can. The newspaper itself, they were ready to print from the very beginning. The publishers arrived before the exchange of flags. They were already ready to set up. They were just waiting on their equipment, and it was late arriving. And so their issue, which they would have had a first issue to come out in conjunction with the exchange of flags, but with the delay of their equipment, it did not come out until a month later.
So the very first Pensacola paper in 1821 was late. That's funny.
It was late. And we value these early editions because they give us insights into what was going on in the community at that time. The people that were here, we relied on it to look at what the people were doing, what activities were started, the connections between the citizens that were already here, the Spanish community, as well as the Americans that came in, all the way down to the foods they were importing and the seeds that were coming from the Northeast to plant in our southern gardens.
I love it. And, you know, one of the other things, and it's interesting to see what was the priority for government 180 years ago. Well, no, 200 years ago. I was trying to do math in my head, but I know the answer.
Yeah.
200 years ago, public health service was a very initial first big concern, right?
Yes, it was, because health, people were very concerned. It was very easy to get sick and die. You did not have good, people relied on either a home remedy if they were in areas where there was not a physician that could help them. And so establishing a health committee took care of things like making sure that the water was clean, what people were drinking was clean, or if you got sick that you stayed home. It's a very interesting parallel to what we're seeing happening today.
Wow.
And I enjoyed using the health department in particular because I have looked at what a great job our whole community has done, and in particular our Escambia County Health Department in helping control what's going on with the vaccinations with the coronavirus.
Absolutely.
So it's a very easy parallel link to our past.
And you know, we'll come back to some of the first, but since we're kind of in this vicinity, the other article that came out this week that was actually written by your co-author, Brian Rucker, but talking about the yellow fever epidemic that came very shortly thereafter the next year, that was such a difficult thing for a young, early city to really, you know, handle, including quarantine rules about, and we're a port city, but quarantining people coming in, right?
Right. Yes, they worked very hard to keep yellow fever at bay. And at the time, they did not know what caused it. And so there were many theories about what did cause it, everything from bad water, which, of course, water did have something to do because it bred mosquitoes, which ultimately was found to be the cause, and that it was transmitted by mosquitoes. And so the quarantine stations were very important. And with the yellow fever epidemics, we have had them, the ones that we see documented, take us back into the colonial period. Even when the British first came in, they had a terrible epidemic just in the first months of setting up British government here. And they lost as many as 200 people a day in that epidemic.
Wow.
One day, 200 people. And so, and this was in 1760, it was either 1764 or 65. I believe it was 64. But again, you see in 1822, they're just getting started. They're just getting everything up and running. And then you have this strike, and it carried off people in great numbers. And it also dampened the economic growth, and it did so for several years. The enthusiasm that people came with, all of a sudden reality hit, that this perhaps was not the promised land, but rather someplace you needed to actually work at being being successful.
And, you know, I loved the little quote that was in one of the articles about how, you know, they were in the middle of this yellow fever outbreak, and they were thankful for the copious showers of rain and the puddles on the ground, not realizing the mosquitoes bore the disease, and that was the cause of all the issue. Hey, one last quick thing.
Right.
God, time always goes so fast with this. The am I right? Dead Man's Island was a quarantine spot, right?
Yes, it was. And ships stopped there and made sure they were not bringing anything in. Sometimes ships could kind of sneak in a bit, but you pretty much were controlled coming into our bay. So you would see evidence over there in some of our early archaeological investigations over there, the medicine bottles and features that were intact, as well as clothing items like shoes. And you can't imagine anyone just disposed of their shoes in a whimsy. And so that, to me, was one of the most poignant discoveries over there, was the discarded shoes that were from people that had come into the quarantine station.
Yeah, it's got to be so fast at what you do as an archaeologist to find stuff and to find the confirming evidence and to see the story laid out in the ground and just, I mean, all of what you do. Well, Margot Stringfield, we are totally out of time, unfortunately, but she was the author of the article about a week and a half ago, and you have another one coming up about cemeteries in a little while, and we'll have you back on talk about that. Margot Stringfield is an archaeologist at UWF Archaeology Institute. Thank you so much for understanding our history and taking a few minutes to share it with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.